Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning. And it is Tuesday at 9 o'clock, and that means it's time to go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in our man Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, what's going on, brother? How are we doing?
Doing well, fellas. How are you guys doing today?
We are doing wonderful. And Charles, lots of discussion today about some Titans potential moves in the offseason. We'll discuss that a little bit more coming up. But I want to start with your thoughts on the trade the other day, some quarterback movement, sending Matthew Stafford to L.A., Jared Goff now out. What did you think of that trade, and what kind of an upgrade is this for the L.A. Rams with Matthew Stafford at quarterback?
It's interesting because Sean McVay, I'll tell you what, when he's done with a quarterback, he's clearly really done. And, I know he had some frustration with Jared Goff. And, you know, it was interesting, a couple of, not this past summer, but summer before, I spent some time with him. We talked at length about Goff. And at that time, he expressed this hopefulness that, okay, Goff's getting to this point where he can grow beyond my control a little bit. He can affect the offense in his own way. And I think what McVay thought at that time is this kid's ready to ascend into the, you know, elite level of guys who basically start to leave their own fingerprints on the offense, and it doesn't take the coach micromanaging it. It didn't happen. For whatever reason, you know, you can either blame it on McVay's scheme or Goff himself. He rolled backward in 2019 and 2020, and after having talked to some people inside the Rams franchise, they just said, look, Sean didn't believe he could run the offense in a way that, you know, he thought was necessary to win a Super Bowl. And once he had crossed that bridge, particularly this season, we were going to have to get rid of him. We were going to have to figure out how to move him despite, you know, signing this massive contract. Now, Matt Stafford is going to be 33 in February, but, you know, the Rams believe this is a guy who's got at minimum 2 to 3 year window of prime elite level play in their system. And if you look at the contracts, with the Rams, everything's aligned. You know, all the big stars are under contract for a couple years here. So the window is there for them to make the Super Bowl push, and they clearly feel Matt is the guy to do that. Now, the price they paid, you know, you to send two first round picks, a third round pick, and then Goff to Detroit. It's framed as a salary offload, which it is. You're getting rid of a toxic asset, which is about $43.2 million in guaranteed money over the next 2 years. They send an extra first-round pick with Goff, basically, to get Detroit to take on that salary. But, you know, Detroit's got Brad Holmes as general manager. He comes over from the Rams. Ray Agnew's his number two. They both still believe that Goff could reboot himself in Detroit and away from the Rams. So it's a heck of a price to pay, you know, for the Rams. But if you really truly believe the quarterback is the only thing keeping you from running the offense you want, and everything else is aligned the way it needs to be to win a Super Bowl, then it makes sense. But you got to win a Super Bowl in the next 2 to 3 year window. And I'll say this about this entire trade. If this does not work out for Sean McVay, if Matt Stafford has issues with him and the offense sputters, it's going to be It's a Sean McVay problem at that point. It's the league, because the way the Rams are painting it is, hey, Sean's adjusting his offense to keep ahead of the NFL. Jared Goff couldn't keep up. We had to go get a guy who could. That's Matt Stafford. Well, if that doesn't work out, now people are going to start to look at McVay and say, is this a John Gruden situation or an Adam Gase situation where you have someone who's ahead of the curve on offense but then can't continue to adjust what he does to keep ahead of everyone?
So what do you think? Matt Stafford, is it going to work out?
You know, I want to say yes. Look, Joe, I mean, you know, I'm from Michigan. Obviously, I've watched this guy, you know, from afar his entire career, and the talent level is there. I mean, I think he's wasted, you know, the vast majority of his career in Detroit. But I also don't want to get too far out of pocket with just giving Matt Stafford all this credit just because he was in the Lions franchise. You know, we look at Calvin Johnson, we look at Barry Sanders, we look at all these other players where we're like, Detroit wastes the careers of great players. And I want to believe that that's Matt Stafford, but, you know, no playoff wins. There were times where, you know, Matt would throw bad interceptions. You know, he's got a lot of fourth quarter comebacks. People talk about that, but I wouldn't say he was always perfect inside Detroit, but they swapped out a lot of offensive coordinators. It was a dysfunctional team. And I will say this, when you talk to people around the league who really know quarterbacks, they all like what Matt Stafford brings to the table. Sean Payton loves him, thinks he's a great player. Guys who are far smarter than me believe in Matt Stafford being a high-level, player in the right system and with the right coach. And look at the teams that went after him. I mean, look, San Francisco made a run at him, really wanted him, and didn't work out. And, Denver, really wanted him. Trying to think of who else really got in on him. Washington, probably had the second-best offer on the table. He was very much pursued, which is pretty interesting, given that he's going to be 33 years old. I think he can have success under McVay, but I'm just telling you, the thing about McVay, what worries me, and I love Sean, I think he's a great coach, I love interviewing him, but, John Gruden was this offensive genius in Tampa, right, and with the Raiders, and then he goes to Tampa. And then all of a sudden his offense started to fall behind. The league figured out how to solve it and attack it. And then he never adjusted. And what did we hear from John Gruden before he ended up going into TV land for a long time? All he had was problems with quarterbacks. The quarterback problems, quarterbacks, he's swapping out quarterbacks. I'm not saying that's McVay, but I'm saying that if Stafford doesn't work out and it's a quarterback problem again, I'm going to start to think about Gruden. Remember, McVay was on Gruden's staff, way back in the day. This is one of his, one of the guys that he sort of patterned himself after, and also Kyle Shanahan. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. The target is now squarely, I think, on McVay moving forward.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Charles, we were talking earlier in the show about Antonio Brown. It looks like he's going to be available to play in this game for Tampa Bay. Yeah. What have you seen from him so far? And as they get through this process here and he enters into free agency, what sort of value do you think he has? How's his image around the league right now?
I mean, it's limited. It's very limited. It's no one wants to take roll the dice on the risk of Antonio Brown. It's not going to be a situation where all of a sudden he's reinvigorated, his career. What's out there on him is out there. He still faces a civil trial, after the Super Bowl is over. That's going to happen. And it's like, none of the issues that were there previously didn't go away in terms of particularly that civil litigation. And, he's curbed his social media stuff. Like, so all the things he's doing, he's saying, he's not doing that inside of Tampa Bay. And I think Tom Brady has had a big impact on him. It was reported that, Tom this time last year was visiting him, in Miami during the Super Bowl. He had Tony Robbins and Adam talk to Antonio Brown. So there's a lot of elbow grease that went into just getting it to this point with Antonio Brown. Like, do I still think he's a good player? Yeah, I do. I think that he looks like a guy who has not played football in a long time, basically sat out for a year and a half. And, I think some of those injuries that you're seeing, it's evidence of someone that, like I said, just hasn't been on the field. I think when he came in, he wasn't in great football shape. And I would say that had it not been for the injuries, he's probably a guy who'd be rounding into form for them right now. But in terms of free agency, I'm just telling you, the best place for that guy probably is going to be in Tampa Bay with Brady, because for whatever reason, Tom Brady seems to be the one guy that he listens to. Like, he fragged everybody else. He even kind of took a little shot at Bill Belichick at one point on social media. He said about the worst things you could say about the NFL, and for whatever reason, Tom stuck with him throughout everything. And since he's been in Tampa, he listens to Tom and has checked himself. Now, I don't know what's going to happen. If they win the Super Bowl, I don't know what that's going to do to Antonio Brown's, ego or where he's at. And remember, there's a mental health component of this, too. So there's just a lot that really goes into this. I'll tell you this, the league, if that guy plays in the Super Bowl, he's going to have a shot at, if they win this game, he could be the kind of factor who wins a Super Bowl MVP. He absolutely can impact the offense like that. And if that happens, if you're the NFL, I mean, that's a nightmare for them because they're trying to disconnect themselves and move it away from that year and a half he was out of football and everything he said and did, and then the upcoming, you know, civil trial for the alleged sexual assault. So it's, if Titans fans are sitting there going, hey, maybe that's a guy, I would not advocate any team that doesn't have Tom Brady on it really rolling the dice on him right now, because that seems to be the only thing that's really worked for him the last couple of years.
That's a great segue, Charles, because Titans fans are saying a few words about Shane Bowen being elevated to defensive coordinator. What are your thoughts on that move from Mike Vrabel, and also on Todd Downing, who you mentioned Gruden, previous coaching staff, of course,
right?
Kind of went up in flames in 2017 in his 1 year as a, or after his 1 year as OC.
Well, you know, Todd, I feel a little bit better about Todd because I don't have a problem elevating within when there's been an ability for the inside candidate to know what the offense is, know what the personnel is, know what the scheme is. And by the way, there's veterans. If there's veterans on the offense, you know, it's a lot. I think it's a smoother transition. We'll see from a play calling standpoint, but that to me is a little less concerning than Bowen, because I mean, Bowen, obviously when you look defensively, I don't know what you would say really worked well. I mean, consistently over the course of the season. And Mike has tried to make it clear that, look, he was basically the de facto defensive coordinator anyway. And so he's elevating into this position that he basically is just earning the title that he already was holding, you know, privately during the course of the season. What that says to me is that Mike and probably John Robinson are saying it was the players. Like, this is a player problem. It's a personnel issue. We don't have an issue with the coach. We think the coach is fine. We think the scheme is fine. Or, you know, I mean, that's not to say the scheme wouldn't be adjusted. But I think clearly they are suggesting in this move that it wasn't, you know, we you know, look, they interviewed, you know, Terrell Austin. It wasn't like they didn't have a chance to tip out and look at maybe other candidates, and still this is the choice that they made. So I would say that it should put the onus on the front office to do a better job with that personnel in the offseason. They have to have a far better offseason with the defensive personnel. And, you know, we'll see. I would probably think that Mike wants to also make some scheme adjustments to the personnel, knowing what failed this year. We talked about the pass rush all season long, and I'm just going to keep reiterating this. Go back and watch Tampa Bay against Aaron Rodgers, okay? Go watch what Shaq Barrett did. Go watch what Ndamukong Suh did. Go watch what Jason Pierre-Paul did, okay? Those are the three guys that absolutely disrupted that game to the point that gave Tampa Bay an opportunity to win that game. You got to have a pass rush to win at a high level in the NFL, particularly if you want to win a Super Bowl. And if they can't resolve that, I don't know that it matters who the defensive coordinator is.
You're just an amazing job of segueing into my questions, Charles. Charles Robinson, Yahoo Sports. So that pass rush, okay, this banged up offensive line, I mean, that, like, I'm worried that we're going to have a – I have been worried that we're going to have a blowout in this game, because I just think the Chiefs are just way better than everybody else. But – Is that the ticket, and do you think we're going to have a great game? Who's going to win Sunday?
Well, the Chiefs, I mean, are a nightmare matchup for the Bucs on offense. I mean, it's so, you know, you sit there and you look at Todd Bowles, the defensive coordinator for the Bucs, and you're like, all right, well, what are you going to do? Are you going to single him up, and are you going to be aggressive and blitz, you know, Pat Mahomes and do some of the things that you did earlier in the regular season? It didn't work. Or are you, you know, which again, this is what they did against Rodgers. They're like, hey, you know, we're going to put pressure on them and make Rodgers, you know, try to be perfect amidst the heat. And I think that's probably what they're going to, the problem that you have now with zoning up Mahomes is he finds guys in space, and Kelsey's having one of these seasons that, you know, it's they, even with the turn and run linebackers that the Bucks have, I still, nobody wants Kelce. Nobody wants a part of that guy. And Mahomes is so good with off-script stuff that, you know, you zone him up, it's going to break. And I think what's interesting here, though, it's going to come down to, let's see how well Mahomes moves. He's had a couple of weeks now to sort of rest that foot. I think Tampa Bay to win this game's got to be perfect. They're going to have to hit Mahomes. Those guys I mentioned are going to have to get heat on him consistently because the secondary is going to be, you know, have his hands full and they're going to lose matchups. And then I think Tom can't repeat the game that he had against Green Bay. Can't have three turnovers. I mean, this is going to have to be an all-world performance for Tom, and he's capable of it. Antonio Brown's going to absolutely have to be on the field and be healthy. They need their full complement of offensive players. The one thing here that makes me nervous about Kansas City is now you're without both of what would have been your starting left tackles. Eric Fisher goes down. You're playing with backup tackles now. And, you know, Mahomes could potentially get hit, you know, and that can affect the game pretty dramatically. I still think Kansas City wins this game, but I don't know that it's a blowout, you know. I think it'll be I hate putting scores on it because, honestly, guys, like, really knows, but – you know, 31-24 Kansas City, if you had to put some imaginary score on it. I Kansas City's just so good offensively that it's a massive amount of pressure on Tampa Bay to keep up and be perfect is it's hard, you know, I think to expect that from Brady and that offense at this point.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports has been our guest here on Robbie and Retro. Charles, great stuff, man. Appreciate you taking time to join us again this week.
Thanks for having me, guys. Have a good week. Enjoy the Super Bowl.
Absolutely.
See you, buddy.
You as well. Charles Robinson, one of the best in the business, joins us here weekly every Tuesday at 9 o'clock. When we come back, we'll dive into a little bit of what Charles had to say there about Sean McVay and Matt Stafford. Did McVay just put a ton of pressure on himself by pulling the trigger on this trade? We'll discuss it when we come back. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Preds fans, join us tomorrow night from 6 to 7 p.m. for Smashville Live featuring Matthew Olivier and Philip Forsberg, hosted by Robbie Stanley, that's me, and Chris Mason. Smashville Live airs every Wednesday on 102.5 The Game during the Preds season and will feature Preds players, former players, and other special guests. We've also gone virtual. That means you can watch the show online via 102.5 The Game's Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and thegamenashville.com. Smashville Live brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. To view or listen to past shows, go to thegamenashville.com/Smashville Live. Looking forward to that. Looking forward to talking to my co-host tomorrow for Smashville Live, Chris Mason, coming up here in about 7 or 8 minutes. So that'll be fun.
That's some serious domage right there, man. I like it.
Yeah.
Huh? We better
ball
get some
is beautiful, baby.
That's right. We better get some promo shots there with you guys together. Okay?
Oh, yeah. We've taken a few photos before. We can use. Everybody loves ball people. Chris Mason, Robbie Stanley, Matthew Olivier, Philip Forsberg, good hair. So that's good for them.
The domes and the beards.
Yeah.
You know, it's not. It's you got to have both.
Look, I mean, you've got to have some facial hair you're working with. If you can't grow any hair on your head, you got to have some you're working with on your face.
Yeah. And you can get the line. See, I can't get the line here, but I keep trying. Maybe when I'm in my 50s.
Yeah, but your hair looks great.
I do have a luxurious head of hair.
You have a sick flow, Joe.
Yeah, ooh, I like it.
Sick flow.
Oh, man. Does Charles Robinson have great hair?
We have to. You know, actually, I think my wife may be listening right now. And if so, I guarantee she howled laughing when you asked if he has good hair. She used to rip him all the time,
really?
Including for his clothing. Yes.
Okay.
We'll have to try to like hook up a Charles and Katie on at the same time.
Yeah.
Could be dangerous for Charles. Bring it back to the college days. Charles has a very like he's got a real short like little like I don't. It's not quite a Caesar cut, but it's you know what I mean. It's
yeah,
something like
yeah.
that. He's got a little patch up there.
Hey.
You know.
He's got any hair at all. That's an improvement over me.
Hey, man, look, if you can look good bald, I think that's awesome.
Thank you.
That's ideal.
Is that your way of telling me I look good bald? Thank you.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think your head is a good shape.
Thank you.
For a bald, like if I shave my head, it would be awful, you know? I'd be this weirdly shaped head. I'll go to my wife, Katie, who calls me a pinhead. And then like this goatee that I can't even connect on one side of it. pathetic. Well, so, you know, you got to feel good about that dome.
I do. What did you think of what Charles threw out there, that they've made this trade now, you bring Matt Stafford in the fold in L.A., and if this doesn't work, all of a sudden, the boy wonder, the boy genius that is Sean McVay, maybe looking like he's got some problems with quarterbacks if Matthew Stafford comes in and it doesn't work out.
Yeah, it's interesting. He's basically calling McVay like little Chucky, huh?
Yeah.
Chucky Jr. Of course, Gruden's back now. Gruden seems to have some good schematics as a coach again. But, yeah, this is a big swing. This is a big swing, but I'll say even if it completely flames out, I like it. And we have no idea who's at fault with this, whatever this McVay-Goff thing is. I think Goff's good. He's not great. Maybe McVay is, like, utterly intolerable if you're a quarterback. I don't know.
It is amazing how quickly that he's just like, you know what? See you, Jared.
Yeah, but I mean, it has been two seasons of, oh, actually this guy isn't all that good.
But I heard it all weekend long. Like, after this trade was made, what about Ryan Tannehill? He goes somewhere else.
Yep.
Lights it up. It's like, I think I heard, I can't remember exactly where I saw it, but somebody referred to it as the Tannehill syndrome.
Yeah.
Like, that's a real thing now.
No,
in
that's
the NFL.
Gosh, that's a great point. And I saw it too, and also forget who said it, but it's a great point, and it really is. I mean, Tannehill's situation has got to give people a little bit of pause, because it can happen. I mean, I can't think of a quarterback before Tannehill who had, I mean, like Jim Plunkett had a resurgence with the Raiders after he was like not good with the Patriots. I mean, I'm going back to the 70s. I'm sure there's been other examples. I guess like Rich Gannon was really good later in his career. I mean, I'm probably forgetting somebody, but it's very rare.
Jake Plummer? Jake the Snake.
There you go. I mean, it's just not a normal thing. I think more and more in this league, though, because people give up so quickly on guys, you probably will see stuff like this. And I could see Goff being good, not with the Lions, because it's the Lions, but yeah. I could see him being good. Maybe, I don't know, unless he's biting kneecaps like Dan Campbell wants him to.
Maybe that's what he's been looking for the whole time.
But like the Rams, I understand you're not going to have a first-round pick till the 30s now or whatever it is. But this is it. This is what the league is. When you have a chance to go for it, you go for it. That's why, like the Titans, as badly as it worked out, going for it with Clowney as a pass rusher, okay, you're going for it. I like the Rams doing this. You're taking a swing. And I'm big on that working. We'll see. But maybe McVay was a big part of the problem with Goff, and it will quickly turn on him if this goes bad.
When we come back, we will dive into the latest with the Nashville Predators. Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst, will join us. We'll break down the last couple of games against Tampa with him. Also, a former Predator hitting a major milestone tonight as well that Chris Mason played with and spent time with. So we'll discuss that as well coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porter with you on this Tuesday morning. Getting into the latest with the Nashville Predators. And to help us do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in our man, Preds TV analyst Chris Mason, brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Tennessee's largest Kubota dealer. C-Mace, what's going on, brother? How we doing?
What's up, Robbie? Love the energy this morning, buddy. Wow, you're getting me going.
Well, that's what I'm here for. And by the way,
right there,
Smashville Live with us two tomorrow, Matthew Olivier and Philip Forsberg. So looking forward to that as well from 6 to 7 p.m. here on 102.5 The Game. So I hope you're prepared for a nice Smashville Live as well. See, Mace, we're going to get into a lot with the Predators, but I do want to start with your opinion on this, because your former teammate, Shea Weber, is playing in his 1,000th NHL game tonight. And it kind of sucks because it was on schedule last year with the way things worked out to take place here in Nashville, which just would have been amazing if the crowd was there and everything involved with it. Obviously, COVID derailed all that. But just the accomplishment of Shea Weber getting to 1,000 games, what does that mean? How impressive is that from what Shea has done in his career?
Well, man, geez, when I look back at him, I remember I've told this story before about Shea. When he got drafted and he came to camp, and he was on my team in training camp, and I remember watching him, and I was just in awe. Like, I was just, he was just so strong and big and confident, and he just looked like he was, you know, he was a man amongst boys. Even though he was a young kid himself, he couldn't grow the big beard back then. And I remember after the second ice time I had, we had the second scrimmage, I called my best buddy on the way home. He played hockey too. He's coaches in the minors now. And I said, remember this name. I'm like, Shea Weber. I'm like, this kid's going to be a star. And he just had all those intangibles. You know what he's like with the media. He's very kind of straight faced and, you know, very direct, and he's not a media gem by all means, but behind the scenes, he's got such a great personality.
And yeah,
for him to be at 1,000 games the way he plays, like he's been through a lot of injuries. The guy plays the game hard, or harder than anybody I know, and he plays it every single game and every single shift. That's the way he plays. But yeah, you're right though, Robbie. That like for it, his COVID has to wreck everything. Could have been his 1,000th game in Nashville. His family would have been there, and you know it would have been a moment. You know, have the cameras right on Shea when they get announced, and I'm sure there would have been a lot of emotion into that game for everybody. You know, all of us included. But what a career! I mean, he's just a natural leader, and the way he plays on the ice, and the respect he demands from his teammates and from his opponents as well.
Yeah, and still rolling along at a very high level as well. Montreal off to a great start this year. See, Mace, obviously things did not go the way the Predators wanted them to in Tampa Bay. Penalties continued to kind of rear their ugly head. John Hines, you could sense the frustration in his comments in the postgame press conference last night. What do you think about the penalties that the Predators are taking? Are most of them avoidable, in your opinion? And it's going to continue to be a conversation all year on the penalty kill until it gets fixed. What are you seeing out there right now with that group?
Well, I think like last night, there's two that, you know, Cousins penalty, he touches the puck first and then, you know, Hedman trips over the stick. And then the first one of the game, Tenorti, I think he sticks his stick out, going for the puck, doesn't touch the guy. The guy dies, takes a penalty. But you know what? You're in all these instances, whether they're good calls or bad calls, you're reaching for pucks instead of getting in there and making contact or you know, skating a little, one more stride and getting body position. They're avoidable, and I think that's the frustrating thing for John Hines. And even the ones that if you get the bad call, then you get the other lazy ones, you know, that really end up hurting the team. So, and it just compounds and it just mounts up. So for John Hines, it's a tough situation because, you can show the video, like, guys, you got to stay out of the box and, you know, this and that, and then, you know, you keep taking penalties. I think we've had this issue with this team before, you know, under Laviolette a couple of years ago, and eventually you got to start having no punishment. You got to start taking ice time away. You have to make something that's, you know, really going to make the guys be aware of what they're doing with their stick. But you just can't win. You cannot win consistently. You can maybe get a game where, you know, the penalty kill's on and your goalie stands on his head and you beat Tampa because of that. But that doesn't happen every game, you know, especially against teams like that. You can't give them anything. So I did sense the frustration with him last night in his post-game interviews, and I don't blame him because they're handcuffing the team. It's not good, obviously, when you do that. You're just hurting yourself, and you can't do it against anybody. You know, other teams you can get away with it maybe sometimes, but Tampa Bay, no chance.
So, CMS, we've done some comparing and contrasting today. You know, the top two centers on this team. I mean, I'm watching Matt Duchene out there, and man, again, another primo opportunity last night, a couple of them, but really the one where he kind of lifts it, you know, and goes back to the bench, and he's clearly, you know, really frustrated right now. And on the other side, you got Ryan Johansson, who just not seen a lot from recently. How would you evaluate both those guys at this moment?
Well, I think very similar to maybe how John Hines is feeling with his penalty problems. I just, you know, you can go to the analytics. I feel Matt Duchene, every game he's getting chances, okay? Like, he's playing hard, he's getting chances, you know, all those things. It is what it is. But, you know, at a certain time, you know, the production has to come. And I feel if he continues to get chances like that, it's going to come. But, you know, they need it now. They need goals. And the same thing with Ryan Johansson. We showed a thing on the broadcast about, you know, the chances created or the expected goals for is one of the big ones. Those guys are up there. You know, they're up there on the team and in the league for creating those types of chances. But, you know, you're paid to score goals. So we got to start seeing production for them. And if this team is going to win or get into the playoffs, they have to have those two guys, you know, scoring, not just playing well, not just getting chances. You need pucks in the back of the net, you know. So that's it's what have you done for me lately? You know, there's only so long you can go and just say, well, I'm getting chances or they're getting chances. Puck's got to start to go.
Preds TV analyst Chris Mace is on the line with us, brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Tennessee's largest Kubota dealer. See, Mace, Ellie Tolvanen finds his way in the lineup last night, gets on the board with a goal to kick things off in the third period. What did you think of Tolvanen in his debut? And do you think the Preds maybe should entertain the idea of keeping him in the lineup and seeing what they have in Tolvanen at this point?
Yeah, you know, I think we've all, since he's been up or had a few games or whatever, I keep waiting. I'm like, all right, Ellie, show me something. I want to see, I want to see all the stuff I saw in the, your Twitter goals in the KHL or, in the Olympics and all that kind of stuff. I want to see that. Never really quite saw it. He's kind of a quiet player. You don't notice him too much out there. It doesn't hurt you, which is good because his defensive play, I think, was the biggest concern when he was a younger man and just coming over here. He's worked on that in Milwaukee, but we saw what a glimpse of what he can do. He doesn't need the puck for long on a stick. There's not many guys that can do that with that shot and that quick release, and that's what we're talking about, Johansson and Duchesne in that situation. The goal scorers find a way to put pucks in the net. He comes in and just, like, snaps. He's got a special shot, and you haven't really seen it too much in his NHL time right now. So there's not many guys like that is the thing. So if you look at the prospects who are, on the taxi squad or even the guys on the roster, there's not many guys that have a shot like he does. So with that game, depending on who's coming back, Kelly Yarncroak might be coming back too. I don't know if some of the other guys are going to be healthy by then. But, this is a guy that earned another opportunity. So whether it's next game or, a couple games down the road, I want to see more.
See, Mace, you guys were talking a little bit about Josi last night on the broadcast and sort of the maybe increased attention on him from other teams. What are you seeing in that regard? You feel like, you win the Norris and teams know that this team doesn't have a ton of offense. Are you seeing more attention on him?
Yeah, I am. I really am. I think, this is how it goes now. Everybody knew he was good before. Everybody knows Ellis is good, but they didn't know, or they didn't maybe think he was the best defenseman in the world. So every time you play the Nashville Predators, the first thing a coach is going to say is, this guy, all over Roman Josi, 59, don't let him breathe out there, give him no space. They'll show clips of what he does, won the Norris Trophy. Everybody in the world knows that Roman Josi is an unbelievable player. He's going to be given the most attention. So I feel like, guys, they're on him quicker. They make a concerted effort to kind of shade over to him a little bit. And when they're in the offensive zone and they're buzzing around, he's still able to do things and generate. And he's just so good that he's able to do that. But it just seems like it's a lot harder. He's going to have to get that going. It's the start of a new season. When you're in the middle of the season, another team could say that, but he's rolling. He's just going to keep rolling. But right now, I just feel like you said, Joe, with the lack of maybe offensive production compared to other years, Roman's a guy that they can pay a special attention to. So just seems like it's a little tougher to get things going sometimes.
Preds TV analyst Chris Mason has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Tennessee's largest Kubota dealer. See, Mace, appreciate you taking time to join us, and looking forward to joining you on Smashville Live tomorrow, brother.
Awesome, buddy. Thank you, guys. Take care.
Absolutely. Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst, has been our guest. When we come back, we'll continue the discussion on the Preds, look back to the trip in Tampa Bay, and what more do we need to see out of the two guys Joe brought up there in Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchesne. All that coming up next. But first, I have got a word from FanDuel, and you can celebrate the 55th edition of the big game with exclusive 55-1 odds on FanDuel Sportsbook. If you've never tried FanDuel before, new users can bet on either team and get 55-1 odds when Kansas City takes on Tampa Bay. That's right. You can bet $5 and win $275 if you pick the winner of the big game on February the 7th. I may be leaning towards the Tampa Bay Buccaneers right now, but don't take my word for it. Just make sure you get on the app and use it. It's easy to use. They've got fast withdrawals, a range of betting options like player props, futures, whatever bet you're looking for, FanDuel Sportsbook has it. They've even got the multi-game parlays and same-game parlay opportunities for you as well. So you can get a massive payday out of a small debt. So just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and use promo code ROB to get started. That's R-O-B. FanDuel Sportsbook, promo code ROB. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. New users only. Must wager on designated boost market. Deposit required. Max bonus of $275. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. And for problem gambling support, call 1-800-889-9789. 102.5 The Game is kicking off every weekend with free beer. Who doesn't love free beer? Make sure you're tuning in all day Friday for your chance to win a $25 gift card from Bavarian Beer House located at 121 Opry Mills Drive here in Nashville. We're going to have a lot of fun with that opportunity coming up on Friday, so make sure you're tuned in for that. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day here on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Thanks to Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst, for joining us in the last segment. Shea Weber, 1,000 games tonight. I got to tell you, that's a heck of an accomplishment. And Shea Weber, obviously, I mean, just crucial to the Nashville Predators and the development of their franchise. And, you know, one of the best players to have ever played for the Predators to hit that 1,000 game mark. Very special. I mean, like I said, it sucks that it's not happening here in Nashville like it was scheduled to last year. He got hurt last year and he came back and was on pace to play game 1,000 in Nashville, which would have just been amazing to watch that environment. But 1,000 games nonetheless, that's a heck of an accomplishment for Shea Weber, who is one of the best guys I've ever dealt with on and off the ice. So lots of respect on my end from Shea Weber and what he's been able to accomplish.
Yeah, and like C-May said, 1,000 games for a guy who plays like that. You know, you got to keep that in mind too. What I don't want to hear, you know what I don't want to hear, what we're going to keep hearing more and more.
Of the trade?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just leave it alone.
It was the right move at the time. It worked out okay. Preds got in the Stanley Cup final next year.
It's cool that he's playing well. He's playing great. That's fun. You know, that's fun to see. And, I mean, was it last year we were talking about, or the year before? I don't even remember. But, like, boy, if he has to hang it up, you know, and all the impact on the Preds and all that stuff, I mean, it's better for everyone. But good to see. You know,
he's lighting it up so far. He's got 6 points, 2 goals, 4 assists in 9 games, and I think Montreal is 6-1-2, playing pretty well right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Up in arms up there.
Montreal might be the best team in the league right now.
They're pretty good right now.
They look impressive.
Yeah. Shea Weber's been a big part of it so far, and going to be awesome tonight. You know, obviously, in the grand scheme of things, you look at the ceremony they're going to have for him tonight. It's not going to be the same, and you're not going to have any fans there. I don't even think his family's allowed to be there in Montreal, so it's kind of a really tough way for Shea Weber to enter 1,000 games, but going to be interesting nonetheless, and there's all kinds of reaction on Twitter right now. He spoke to the media a few minutes ago and just kind of was going down memory lane in his career with his parents and everything, and you don't get like introspective Shea Weber a lot in the media, but getting it today, and it's pretty cool to go back and look at some of that. So best of luck to Shea Weber tonight as he plays in his 1,000th game. A tough stretch for the Predators in Tampa Bay. They fall last night 5-2 to the Lightning, the defending cup champs. They lost 2 in a row. They've lost every game they played so far this year on the road between Dallas and Tampa Bay. And penalties last night, Joe, continued to rear their ugly head. Again, you end up giving up a power play goal, gave up another goal very shortly after the power play expired for the Tampa Bay Lightning. And you could sense some frustration last night from Predators head coach John Hines in his post-game press conference talking about the penalties. Here's what John Hines had to say.
Hey, John, just curious from your perspective, what kind of domino effect does the falling behind early have? I mean, there's a lot of things that contribute to it, but overall, as the game goes on, do you see a domino effect in terms of energy and expending energy that maybe you could use in other ways because you guys are falling behind so early?
Yeah, I think the penalties is a big thing with it. You know, this is going to be addressed for – there's only so many times you can dress until you have that. You're going to put a stop to it. So we're going to have a discussion about this prior to our next game for the last time. That's one. You know, once you have to kill that many penalties, your bench gets disrupted. Guys that, you know, don't penalty kill, they're out. And then when the Lions come back, you know, you got to get a little bit of a reset coming out of that. And then, you know, when you're coming from behind, I think if it's one or two, you know, you're still right in there, but when it gets to three, you know, sometimes you got to overplay some guys that, you know, you think are possibly going to be able to produce or playing well. So I think there's multiple effects, but I'd say when we've gotten games where we've been in penalty trouble, that's probably the biggest issue.
So that was John Hines after the game last night. And, Joe, some pretty obvious frustration there about the penalties and the type of penalties that are being taken, and said basically, you know, it's only so many times you can address the penalties that are being taken out there before you got to put a stop to it. Sounds like some frustration boiling over from John Hines as he looks at his group and the penalties that they've been taking.
That's a tough one to stop, though, isn't it? I mean, it's I think back to, well, 3 years ago when that was a big thing for a great team, for a President's Trophy winning team, but they were struggling to stay out of the box. I mean, you can talk about it, but some of these penalties, some of them are ticky-tack, and some of them are hard to avoid. Some of them, you just got to be smarter than that. But what really is John Hines, what's his recourse here? You got playing time, you got ice time. But, I mean, this is not something that a coach directly affects, really.
Well,
right?
It's like, you know, also like Roman Josi. I mean, he took a pretty bad penalty last night. It was a tripping penalty, and it's from reaching. And he talked about, I mean, Josi talked about it after that it was a bad penalty on his part. You're not putting, like, you're not sitting him down on the bench. It's just not going to happen. So I don't know exactly what the recourse is there, but I do know, you know, as C-May said in the last segment, I mean, some of the calls maybe you don't like. Like the Tenorti one last night, I thought it was a dive. Like you go back and look at it, it's a dive. But you can't put your hands in that spot and have your stick down there to give them the opportunity to do it. Now, it's on the officials to make the right call at that point too, and I understand that. But a lot of these penalties coming from just not being in the right position or taking the right approach. Like C-Mace talked about, you know, putting a body on somebody rather than reaching after him. I mean, that's kind of the adjustment the Predators are going to have to make in some of these. And look, some penalties are unavoidable, and you live with them, and you just got to kill them off. That's the other part of this, too. When you get penalties, kill them off. Don't be giving up power play goals every single game. That's got to get better, but that's been a major bugaboo from the Predators so far. I do want to pass something along from Adam Vingan, and this is interesting. We talked about this earlier in the show in terms of the gap in the third period of Victor Arvidsson and Ryan Johansson. You looked at the time on ice sheet last night, and there was a 7-minute gap in the third period where neither one of them were on the ice. Well, that has since been updated by NHL.com, and there is no such gap at this point. So John Hines kind of seemed like he was not thinking it was a big deal after the game last night. Turns out it was an error by NHL.com. So
you ever seen that before?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How often?
It doesn't happen very often, but I've seen it before.
So we have to go back and erase all these things we talked about earlier on the show now. Can we do that, Roarporth? Erase it from existence.
I can try.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, because the weird thing about that was the Arvidsson.
Yeah, that's what I couldn't figure out.
It's like, okay, Johansson, sure. We've seen that plenty of times. Probably we'll see it again. But why would, Arvidsson is all over the ice, taking a shot every 5 seconds. Okay, well, that's good to have that clarification. I got a clarification, too.
Okay.
And my wife texted me. She's not called me a pinhead. She calls me a Bert head.
Oh, okay.
Bert and Ernie. Anybody remember Bert?
Oh, yeah.
Do you guys know Bert and Ernie Sesame Street?
Yes.
Fourth? Yeah. Sake. Oh, I'm so happy. Proud of you guys.
Thank you.
Bert has the tiny little head. You know, thank you. So we got that cleared up.
I'm glad we got that part of it.
So imagine Bert with a bald head.
Yeah.
Wouldn't go well.
No, it wouldn't. Some other news in the NHL. Looks like Patrick Laine making his debut for the Columbus Blue Jackets tonight. So, very interesting there. It looks like he's
playing
on a line with Alexander Texier and Cam Atkinson. So, you're talking about three guys that like to pull the trigger. Those are three guys. I'm interested. Who's going to pass the puck on that line? It's going to be interesting.
You Patrick getting Laine, assist?
If you're the Predators, you think you get him out of the division, and all of a sudden he's back in there.
You get an assist if you get a rebound off a shot, too. That's an assist.
That's true.
Just keep firing away, baby.
Oh, offense coming for Columbus. We'll see if the Predators are able to figure it out. Look, Johansson, Duchesne, I like a lot of what they've been doing, especially on Duchesne's part. Got to finish. Got to find a way to hit the back of the net.
Maybe a little got a little time in Florida, right? I mean, I assume they're staying down there, right?
Oh, yeah.
Hit the links, relax, get away
a little
bit. I don't
know if they'll be allowed to do that.
Or watch a lot of film.
Watch a lot of film in the hotel room.
Have a pre-wrap team meal, whatever the case may be. But one of them just needs a break. The other one needs to play better.
Going on the road, just not quite the same right now in the NHL.
At least it's warm, right?
It's warmer down there. Yeah, it's in the mid-70s down there. So hopefully the Predators enjoy a little bit of sunshine today and get back at it on Thursday against Florida. Have another opportunity for Preds Pick the Click coming up on Thursday as well. So make sure you're tuned in for that. That's going to do it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. Joe, good to see you again.
You too.
Absolutely. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. Darren, Donica, Chase coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.